Are you pumped? It's time for WHUS 91.7 FM's Radio Naturopath. I am Fran Storch, and I'm here with my co-host, Ron.
Good morning, Fran.
Yeah. So we've got stuff to talk about for the next hour. We've been on the air here at WHUS since 2002. That's a long time.
Is that right? Really? Yeah. You've been on since 2002? Huh?
Yeah, that would be 15 years.
I'm kind of a newbie.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I can't believe I've been on this radio station for 15 years. That is pretty darn amazing. So if you have questions or comments and would like to call in with your interests or concerns, the number to call is 860-486-9487. That's 860-486-9487. You can also text us at that number, 860-486-9487. And you can email us at radionaturopath@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. So, it's about to be summer, although you wouldn't know it. It's very odd. I mean, we have just been having some freakish weather.
Doesn't feel like summer out there.
No, I know. No. Although it's supposed to get a little bit better today. Supposedly we're going to hit 70. It looks kind of overcast now, and maybe the overcast will improve. I don't know. But it's really kind of being... it's making it hard to appreciate the summer and, appreciate the weather and get outdoors and stuff like that. Actually, it looks like we might not see 70 today. But it's going to get better. It's going to get more summery. The weekend looks a little bit better. You're going to have some overcast. And then Monday and Tuesday, it's going to be cactus weather.
Cactus weather. Okay.
Yes, if you look at Weatherbug and if it's going to be a really hot day, they put a little bright sun with a cactus in front of it. That means it's going to be super hot. And anyway, it's supposed to get into the 80s, so break out your shorts for those, at least those 2 days. So what are you doing to accept the summer and accept the summer into your life? And have you been looking around at the bugs and looking around and taking care to protect yourself against bugs that could be an issue for you? So I can't emphasize enough, when you go outside, any time that you're outside, you could get bitten by a tick. So make sure you check yourself. We are in the state of Connecticut. This is the state where Lyme disease was discovered. And ticks are just, they're very rich sources of infection. So you don't just necessarily get Lyme disease from them. You can get all kinds of other cool co-infections like ehrlichiosis and anaplasma and bartonellosis and Rocky Mountain spotted fever and babesiosis. I see patients with babesiosis and Bartonella here, not just Lyme disease. So it is very important to check yourself. So what you do is when you go home, when you get home from your walk or your, whatever you've been doing outside, it's important to go inside and check yourself thoroughly. Ticks like to hide in cracks and crevices into what we call the intertriginous zones. Those are going to be places like your groin, the place where your legs connect to your hips. When I had my Lyme disease, that's where the tick was attached, right there. And had a beautiful erythema migrans rash, big old rash from that tick bite there. The tick can attach to your armpits. That's another good place to check. And the other good place to check is your hairline and on your scalp. You can miss tick bites there. And of course, check your whole body. And if there are places that you can't find, that you can't see, that's when the use of mirrors is a good idea, as well as other people who you don't mind having look at you. It's really important. If you do get bitten by a tick, there is a protocol such that, and not every doctor will follow this, but I don't think it's a bad idea that you go straight to a walk-in or to your primary care physician and you get a single dose of doxycycline, a 200 milligram dose of doxycycline, as soon as you see the tick, and it's prophylactic. Because chances are pretty good that the tick is going to be infected with Lyme disease, and you might as well not take chances. And I know, are you concerned about antibiotic resistance? Antibiotic resistance is not as important as preventing Lyme disease. And, any Lyme-literate practitioner will tell you that. I heard that straight from Dr. Horowitz, who is a big Lyme practitioner in Hyde Park, New York. It's really important to get to prevent Lyme disease, because Lyme disease can be devastating. And even if it's not devastating, it can nag at you for years. And I have patients who appear to have chronic Lyme, and I treat them off and on for it. Sometimes they feel good and sometimes they don't. And I have things that I treat them with off and on. I have natural medicine things that I treat them with off and on. But it kind of sticks with them for years, and it makes you tired and it makes you achy. And it can make you irritable and depressed. It's the great imitator, so it can look like a lot of other things. So I do want to emphasize, go out and, you know, when you go outside, I'm not saying don't go outside, because I would never say that. I think it's really important to be able to get outside. That one of the reasons people have mood issues and energy issues is because they don't get outside enough. But when you do go outside, when you come in, check yourself over. Make sure you don't have ticks on you, and pull them off as soon as you can. And so I heard an interesting thing. If you want to save the tick and have the tick tested, you can do that. If that's your choice, what you do is you get a little glass vial and put some isopropyl rubbing alcohol into the vial to preserve the tick, and then take it wherever you're going to have it tested. Now, the only thing with that is if you test the tick and the tick is positive, you don't actually know if you have Lyme disease, because if you take the tick off you, within a couple hours of getting it on, you may not catch Lyme disease. And you may. There's that idea that the tick has to be on for 48 hours before you actually get Lyme disease. And that's controversial. That, you know, the thing is, if I saw a tick on me, a deer tick on me, I would probably go get the doxycycline. I would certainly also do some natural medicine stuff. But I would go get that single 200 milligram dose of doxycycline. It's worth doing. And you know, if you're concerned about probiotics, you take your dose of doxycycline and then you hit yourself with a bunch of yogurt or kefir, or you take some probiotics and pills. So those are good things to do. If you want to prevent yourself from getting the bugs on you, you can get nice essential oils. The essential oil we like best for ticks is rose geranium, and so you can get preparations at the health food store that contain rose geranium. And if you don't mind, don't just spray it on your skin, because you can sweat it off. It can come off your skin. Spray it on your clothes. The other thing is, some of us like to ride on the rail trails. We like to ride our bikes on the rail trails or go walking on the rail trails. That would be a time. If you go walking or running on the rail trails, then you do want to spray your clothes or your headband or whatever you might be wearing. And those of us, when we go on the rail trails, there's various bugs that like to fly around our faces. And this is something I always forget to do. But spray your helmet. Spray your bicycle helmet. And spray it on the outside of the helmet, and spray it around the rim, right where the bugs, because there's those little gnats that fly in your face when you're climbing hills. And it seems like there's a speed at which they can get to you. And it seems to be 7 miles an hour. If you're traveling at 7 miles an hour or lower, then they tend to not be able to get to you.
And that is defined as bug-bitingly slow.
Bug-bitingly slow, yes. Which we did. We did that on Sunday.
We did. It was very nice.
Yeah, we rode a bug-bite.
It's a nice day.
And it was easier to do a bug-bitingly slow ride, because for our recovery ride, we chose to ride to Hampton. Now, why we did that, I'm not sure, but you said let's go to Hampton, so we did.
We didn't go fast. We
climbed
the hills really slow, and you can still do a slow ride and ride without doing hills.
I don't know if I'm going to do a true recovery ride to Hampton again. I think it's silly. If I'm going to do a ride to Hampton, I want to at least put it, just because it's a drag going up those hills really, really slow, you know. So, I mean.
And the bugs might bite you.
And you get bug bites, I know. Mm. But the rail trail, that's one thing about the rail trail this time of year is the bugs. So spraying your helmet is a really good idea. You can put, you can get actual bug spray and spray that on your helmet. And you can also use certain essential oils. If you use thyme oil or tea tree oil or peppermint oil, if you'd use a combination, you can just use a spray bottle with some drops of those essential oils and just spray your helmet. You want to spray it on the actual outside of the helmet and also the headband as well. So, and then you might get bitten by bugs a little bit less, just the annoying kind, those little gnat things that tend to bite you, or black flies.
Until deer fly season.
Oh, the deer flies. Those are nasty. Yeah,
goodness. That is why you need to increase your speed by the time deer fly season comes along.
Ah, yeah, if you're running in the woods, it's true.
Yeah.
I've been bitten by a deer fly not in the woods. I mean, I guess there were woods nearby, but I've been on a road ride and been bitten by a deer fly. That hurts.
Yeah, 28 is my magic number. You know what that is?
No.
28 is the number of deer fly that I killed on a run one morning.
Whoa. My goodness.
Well, it became like an adventure because there were so many of them, I decided to count them.
Speaking of the number of bugs that we saw on a ride, the other thing that's out there is the caterpillars. That we were on that ride to Hampton, and the roads were littered with the gypsy moth caterpillars. And that's the other thing. People are getting rashes from the gypsy moth caterpillars. And the thing is, repelling them, like putting bug repellent on, doesn't do very much because they fall on you. They're not chasing after you. They just fall on you because they're raining out of the trees. And then I'm not sure if they have a substance on them that's irritating, or if it's just that they have those little hairs on them and that irritates people. I would think that there's probably some substance because people are getting rashes from them. The gypsy moth caterpillars are falling on them and then they get rashes from them. So, you know, use your usual favorite stuff. I'm really a big fan of witch hazel for that sort of thing because witch hazel is astringent. It'll tend to pull out any irritants that the caterpillars could be carrying on them. It tends to settle down inflammation and tends to pull out the inflammatory compounds from you. And, you know, if you have itching or discomfort, I really love calendula cream. Like if you do witch hazel, even if you get a mosquito bite, if you do witch hazel and then you put calendula cream on it, you'll get a lot of mileage out of that. It really tends to help. It feels really nice afterwards. But, you know, the thing is to wear repellent. Again, the repellent's not going to work very well for the caterpillars because they're not chasing after you. They don't really care about you, whereas something like a gnat or a mosquito or a deer fly, they're interested in you because they want your blood. Caterpillars they're falling on you incidentally because they're interested in eating leaves.
So let's talk about that for a second.
All right.
Because I am sitting at my desk yesterday morning,
yeah,
and I get this like kind of itchiness kind of on my neck, and I can't, you know, I'm like flicking it, and I think, God, do I have a tick or what? And I went into the bathroom real quick and took a look in the mirror, and I had a gypsy moth walking up my neck.
A caterpillar,
right. Yeah. And it was really irritating, and I got rid of it and dumped it. You know, I just threw it out or squished it or something. I don't know what I did with it. Anyway, but it continued to irritate where it had walked. So there's something about the caterpillars that have or some sort of a skin irritant.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, if they have a compound, or if it's just that there are tiny, they have tiny hairs on them and the tiny hairs are irritating. I'm not sure which it is. But that's something. Why don't you look that up?
Well, I'm trying to. I'm looking right now to see if I can
find that. Because, we're just having the most incredible season. I mean, we have leaves littering our yard almost like it's autumn.
Yeah, it's going to be like they're going to probably defoliate everything.
Oh, I hope not. And everybody's hoping that the mold, that goes on them, the rain is helping mold the mold that grows on them to kill them. So here's there's a TV station called WWLP. It must be in Worcester. Because
I see it right here.
Yes, because here we are in Brimfield, Mass. They're talking about the irritant that gets on it. So when it goes on your skin, you'll get a rash and some redness. And then they're just saying use antihistamine and hydrocortisone, things that I wouldn't tell you to use.
Right.
But it doesn't say, they're...
Well,
everybody's hoping for this. They're hoping for this heavy rain that's going to, cause that mold to grow, and it doesn't seem to be taking hold yet.
So I have a little piece here from a Boston source that says that the problem is specifically caused by the hairs of the caterpillar.
It is the hairs.
And avoid the contact. And the only way to prevent the rash, which can last up to 2 weeks.
Up to 2 weeks.
How about that? And they're showing some pictures here that we can't see over the radio unless you pull your radio really, really close to you. that show some pretty impressive rashes, I mean,
right.
on people. You know, so they do cause a problem. People are very allergic to them. So, anyway.
Yeah, what I'm wondering about with that is that, again, is that really just the hairs scraping? Like, is it just because the hairs are scraping along your skin, or is there a compound in the Gichimaw caterpillars?
I wonder if maybe the hairs, like, come off and into your skin, get stuck in your pores. I'm not really sure.
But, right.
They also talk about a topical steroid from your doctor, which,
right.
of course, I know you love so much.
Yeah.
What do you recommend other than a topical steroid in the naturopathic world?
So get this. Gypsy moth larvae, they don't bite. They have two types of hair called setae that they use to defend themselves with, which can create a stinging sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually sting you. Reactions to these stinging hairs vary from mild to moderately severe itching with an accompanying rash, similar to contact dermatitis. So maybe, you know what it is? I don't know if there's a compound on the hairs or if it's just that the hairs themselves cause an antigenic reaction, because they're defensive hairs, so they must have something in them that's noxious to other organisms. So that's what's going on. The hairs are actually stinging you a little bit,
yeah.
and you're having a hypersensitivity reaction. Your immune system is reacting to a compound in them that's bothering you. I think that's what's going on. And so what do you do? It's the same thing as when you have other bug bites. I mean, if you want to go the MD route, you can do antihistamines and steroid creams if you would like to do that. I'm not a big fan of steroid creams because in naturopathic medicine, we're taught that steroid creams are suppressive. They drive illness deeper into the body. They will give you relief because they do relieve inflammation, but they don't really treat the problem. Antihistamines, I get concerned about just because if you use too much antihistamine, antihistamines are, you know, like Benadryl and your other antihistamines that you find, diphenhydramine, those are concerning because they're anticholinergics, and things that block the neurotransmitter acetylcholine cause cognitive issues. I don't know if doing a little topical Benadryl once in a while will really make that happen, but that's why it's not my favorite thing to use. And if you can use something like witch hazel and calendula cream, I really like that a lot better because you're not going to get any of those side effects. You're not driving the illness deeper into the body. And witch hazel is so nice because it's just an astringent. It's going to just pull the immune issues out of your skin, and then the calendula cream is going to help to heal and soothe it. So that's my and for any kind of bug bite or bug interaction that you have, that's a good recipe for that. So then we should talk a little bit about sunscreens too. We want to remind you that you can get sunburn now. I did certainly get some sun. I certainly did get some sun effect in the last few days of riding, and even though it's not very, you know, it's overcast and stuff, you still can get sunburn and a tan and stuff. So if you, you know, a small amount is not going to be a big deal, but using sunscreen is a good idea if you're going to be exposed to the sun for a very long time. And if you're going to use sunscreen, it's better not to use chemical sunscreens, the kind that have dispersed particles of various metals can be a little bit nicer. So ones that have dispersed titanium in them or dispersed zinc, those are going to be better for you because all they do is sit on your skin and they reflect sunlight. They don't get into your skin and block the sun and have other side effects to them. However, if you have a choice between getting a bad sunburn because you're in a very sunny place and not using sunscreen because you're concerned about the chemicals, I would go ahead and use the chemicals, unfortunately. You know, they are approved by the FDA. If you're concerned about toxins in them, then just drink lots of water and sweat and, you know, other times when you're not in the sun, just make sure you treat yourself really healthfully. But if you're going to get a really bad sunburn, you don't want to get a really bad sunburn. It's better to wear sunscreen. You know, it is good for you to get some level of sunlight. If you get no sunlight and if you get no tan at all, that's not actually good for you. Ultraviolet rays do have health benefits. When you are exposed to the sun, you increase your thyroid function, you increase mood. We are diurnal creatures, and we benefit from light, and we're energized and enlivened by light. Most of us, anyway. Some people are night owls, but most people are not night owls, and most people do benefit from sunlight. So getting outside is really important. It's really good for you. And so when you do that, getting some ultraviolet does turn on your thyroid function. It improves your melatonin function, and adequate melatonin is necessary for good sleep. You make vitamin D, which is important for all kinds of functions in your body, and you make serotonin as well. And serotonin is helpful for mood, helping you to not be depressed and also not to be anxious. So those are all really important.
So is there such a thing as a healthy tan?
As a healthy tan. Yeah, well, that's controversial.
I'm reading a New York Times article right now, and the answer here with these guys, Dr. Francesca Fusco, assistant clinical professor of dermatology at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City, replies.
And frequent contributor to Women's Health magazine.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, she replies, simply put, no.
Yeah, I know.
There is no degree of tanning, whether from natural sunlight or artificial light, like tanning beds, that can be considered safe.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
So, there you go.
Right. So, I know. I don't know what to say to that, because I don't 100% agree with that.
Right.
I mean, I don't think that lying out in the sun and being... See, this is the thing. On the one hand, not only doesn't everybody get skin cancer, most people don't get skin cancer. So if the sun was really, really dangerous, everyone would get skin cancer.
Right.
On the other hand, when you go to Australia, the rate of skin cancer is very high. So those people have a set of factors that make it more likely for them to get skin cancer. They have fair skin, so they don't have a lot of melanin to start with to protect them from skin cancer. They spend a lot of time in the sun. They, you know, that the people of Australia are transplants from Northern Europe. I mean, they're British, and they're transplanted to a place that's tropical and subtropical. So they did not evolve in that climate. They're really better suited to the British climate. And that's why they thrived and did well in that area. So then you transplant them and you move them to a place where there's a lot of sunshine, much more sunshine than they did their evolution in. And now you get all sorts of problems. So melanin definitely protects you from getting skin cancer. The darker you are, the less likely you are to get it. Which does not mean if you have dark skin that you can't get skin cancer. That's not true. And so even if you are, you know, have a very dark complexion, and you're concerned about getting a sunburn, you could still get a sunburn. You still have to wear sunscreen. My little nephews get slathered with sunscreen, but then, of course, my sister's going to slather them with anything to protect them from stuff, but that's okay.
She's going to put them in a bubble.
Aw.
A mom thing.
I know.
It's what moms do.
Yes, and since she's worried about my little nephews being safe from stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so.
Well, as parents, you're always worried about your kids being safe from stuff.
Yes. Be safe.
Be safe. Yes. Be safe.
Yes.
Safety man.
All right.
Yes.
So anyway. So the thing is, why do they get more skin cancer in Australia? They're fair skinned. There may be something to do with how they're eating. You have to eat a lot of produce to help to protect you from skin cancer, whether I don't know if they do or they don't. And if they're eating a standard, you know, modern diet, they're not getting as much produce as they should, because there are things you can do to help to protect yourself from sunburn. It may not protect you 100%, but it can help. So if you have adequate essential fatty acids in your body, so if you take fish oil or if you eat fish and you eat nuts and seeds, your essential fats are going to reduce inflammation. You're going to be less likely to get a sunburn. If you have adequate vitamin A, actually beta carotene in your system, and you can even take high doses of mixed carotenoids, and that can help you. Or if you just eat a lot of greens. If you're eating enough greens that you look at your palms and they're a little bit orange, you're going to get some degree of sun protection from that. The beta carotene in your fat is going to help to protect you from getting sunburn.
Is that why our president is orange? Sorry, I had to go.
Don't
there.
Even get me started.
Oh. I'm sorry. Anyway,
he's orange because he's scary. Mm. But anyway, let's not go there right
let's
now.
Let's not go there.
So, and then the other thing is astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is another chemical, and it works similarly to beta carotene in that it's a very darkly colored carotenoid, and astaxanthin does not come from plants. Actually, that's not true. It sort of does. It sort of does and sort of doesn't. Astaxanthin is mostly, it's made by algae and krill. Well, maybe that's not true. I think it's made mostly by microalgae and little tiny, like plankton, make astaxanthin and algaes and things that sit on the top of the water. Do you know what color flamingos are?
Well, they're certainly not pink because they eat things that make them pink. But they're normally white, I believe.
If you take if a flamingo doesn't get to eat the algae that it normally eats, if it's somewhere else, like it's in fresh water, it's somewhere where it doesn't get that algae, a flamingo will be white. That's exactly right. But flamingos pink up very nicely because they eat a lot of stuff that has astaxanthin in it. They eat krill and little shrimps and, you know, little things that you find at the edge of, you know, bays and things. That's why they're pink. And that's why salmon is pink, because it eats some tiny critters that make astaxanthin. And so you know how when you get the Stonington Reds, those pretty little shrimp that I love so much that you won't let me get sometimes. I'm kidding.
You can get them whenever you want, but I just want you to go through the bother of peeling them all.
Do you like them?
Not particularly.
I'm going to get me some Stonington
you
Reds.
You should get yourself some.
Because the Stonington Reds are here. They were at the fish market, and I chose not to get them. But I love Stonington Reds. So shout out to Paul and the fish market in Willimantic for bringing me Stonington Reds, and to all of you who catch your Stonington Reds down in Stonington. Why are Stonington Reds red? Astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is this lovely compound. It's a terrific antioxidant, and it will orange you up a little bit. And it helps to protect because it's an antioxidant, and because I think there's a color barrier as well, it will help to protect you from sunburn. And so astaxanthin is one of the things I take every day. I take astaxanthin, and I have a green powder, and I eat lots of greens. And if you look at my palms, they're a little orange. And I look at my patients sometimes. I'll check my patients' palms, and if they're a little on the orange side, I know that they're eating a lot of greens. And you're saying, well, why would they be orange if they're eating greens? Because the reason that leaves are green is chlorophyll. They're not really green. They're green because of the chlorophyll. But if you starve them of oxygen and you take them off the plant, they turn whatever color they really are. That's why you have those beautiful colors in the fall. It's because the leaf gets sealed off from the tree and it's no longer able to do photosynthesis. And so it turns to its base color. And depending on what tree it is, it's going to turn yellow or orange or red or all those beautiful colors you see in the fall. And, you know, a lot of times if you get kale that's been off the plant for a long time, if you let your kale go bad, it'll turn yellow. And so that's what kale really is. So the carotenoids in kale are yellow, and that's the color of lutein and zeaxanthin, which is why kale is so lutein is definitely going to be yellow, because that's why it's called lutein. Lut means yellow in, I don't know, Greek or Latin. And so you get lutein from kale, and it's really good for your eyes. Time for kale salad.
There you go. They're actually known as royal red shrimp.
Oh, the Stonington Reds?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice.
And they're in other parts of the country, too.
Oh.
But they are special.
Yeah, they're special because they're so red.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're different. They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
Poor things. I like to eat them.
Yeah, he's a fan of Royal Red Shrimp, also known as Stonington Red.
Yes.
So there you have it.
Because you can get them in Stonington,
mm-hmm.
Connecticut.
And you can get them in Georgia. And you can get them in other places.
You can get Stonington Reds in Georgia?
No, you can get Royal Reds in Georgia. They probably don't. They probably call them something Georgia Reds.
Don't they know that they're Stonington Reds?
Well, where do I go?
Did they come from Stonington?
No.
Oh.
There are shrimp all over the world, dear.
Oh.
They're not just here.
Right.
Okay.
Are there flamingos all over the world?
No.
Oh.
No.
Just in tropical places.
Are in certain tropical places.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And they turn pink because of astaxanthin. Astaxanthin mm-hmm. is a marvelous antioxidant. Like I said, astaxanthin. So you can take astaxanthin, and it can help to protect you against sunburn. I don't want to say that you're going to get absolute protection from taking astaxanthin, fish oil, and carotenoids, but it will help. And one of the reasons you see people getting bad sunburns is the diet's not so great. If you're eating a diet that gives you inflammation, you're going to be more likely to get sun issues. You know, sun poisoning, where not only do you get a sunburn, you get a rash from it. Some people get that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people, and anyone can get it if they have enough sun exposure and the conditions are right. But some people are more prone to that than others. I have a patient who was prone to sun poisoning, and when she would take adequate doses of fish oil, she wouldn't get it as bad, or she wouldn't get it at all. So I know the essential fatty acids definitely can help to protect you from sun issues. So I like my fish oil. I like to take my fish oil. I also like to take my black cumin seed oil. I think the black cumin seed oil is helping me with fungal issues, which is a thing that it can do. So shout out to black cumin seed oil. That's sort of a deviation. But anyway, so there you go. There's some ideas for you for protection. Don't forget to drink lots of water. Make sure that you're hydrated. I heard once again a patient came into me in the last few days and said, I don't like to drink water. I don't like the taste of it unless it has a flavor in it. Sigh.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know if that's because this person is drinking city water and it
maybe
doesn't taste good.
Maybe they have terrible water. Yeah, that's a very good possibility.
But some people are like they don't drink any water at all unless it's flavored, or they don't drink anything unless it's got some sort of flavor in it. It is true that people are more likely to drink something if they taste carbohydrate in it, which is why, you know, when you get a sport drink, it is flavored. You're going to be more likely to down more of it if it tastes like something. I know that's true of me. And I'm not one of those I don't like water people. I do like water. I don't like water that tastes bad, but like we have wonderful water. We have a 200-foot well in our house, and our water is terrific. And so I love our water. But I do have that issue of I have trouble drinking. I'll be thirsty. I'll take a couple sips, and then I have to put it down, and you know I leave things over. And that phenomenon is a phenomenon of dampness. If you don't move water quickly through your body, you'll find that you'll be thirsty. You'll take a couple sips, and then you have to put it down. So there's a constitutional condition of dampness, which can be exacerbated by eating too much starch and sugar, which we think of as damp-inducing foods, whether you're talking in Western natural medicine or in Chinese medicine. We talk about starches and sugars being damp-inducing, or if you're talking about Ayurveda, they talk about kapha, foods that increase kapha, and those, again, are going to be starches and sugars. So when you live in a damp climate, you have to be careful of consuming too many damp-inducing foods. Fruits that are high in sugar. So your tropical fruits don't do so great in damp climates. If you're in a place that's hot and damp, it's not going to be as big a deal. So if you're down in Florida and it's very hot and you want to eat an orange, you should eat an orange because it's going to do you good down there. But up here, I'm not saying you should never eat oranges, but oranges are not as compatible with this climate. The fruits that grow here actually help you with the condition of dampness. So Ron was looking out over the power lines, and we have power lines next to our house where they cut down a lot of trees, and we had a lot of pine trees there, so we have very acidic soil. And what loves acidic soil, Ron?
Oh, the berries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ron was noticing that there's tons of blackberry plants that are growing along the power lines.
Yeah.
Are you sure they're raspberries?
Yep, I'm sure they're raspberries.
I'll have to go look.
Yep, they are raspberries.
All right. He thinks they're raspberries.
Right. The blackberries are much darker berries. We get those too, but we have a lot more raspberries than
really?
We do blackberries.
Really? Yep. I noticed too that we get the amazing treat of there's some black raspberries growing back there. And I'm like, what's a black raspberry? And then I saw one. I'm like, this is definitely a raspberry, and it's definitely the color of a blackberry. That is so cool. And I'm just wondering if a black raspberry is a raspberry-blackberry hybrid, which could certainly happen out there because we got both.
You never know.
But yeah, there is a thing called the black raspberry, and it's definitely the shape of a raspberry, and it's the color of a blackberry, and it's very tasty, no problem, very good. So Did you see any? No, they were all flowering now.
They're just flowering now. Well, they're actually the flowers. The petals are falling off. You can see the berries develop.
Oh, that's so exciting.
So they're coming.
We'll have
they're
to
coming.
Go back
It'll be
there
a while. It'll be a while, but
we'll
they'll
go
be
back
here.
There and pick.
You can pick a bowl of them and then put them on your oatmeal in the morning. And
yeah.
Just really nice.
I like to eat them. Just eat them.
I know you do.
I like to put them in a bowl and eat them like that.
Okay.
Just eat them
plain. You can do
plain.
That too.
Because they're very good all by themselves.
Yeah.
I've been getting into strawberries and cherries, and I did. And the blueberries, we now have blueberries growing in the U.S., although I think the blueberries are coming from California right now. But soon the blueberries will be coming from... soon the blueberries will be coming from down south, and then it's funny, when you see the blueberries that you buy in the store, they make their way up the coast until they get to New Jersey, and then I get very excited because they're from New Jersey, and then you go to Winsong Farm.
Mm. Okay.
And then after you go to Winsong Farm, you go to We Like It. Yes, you have something to say.
Well, yeah, we have a couple of questions.
Oh, okay.
We have callers.
Okay.
So, anyway, one of them, we're going to try to make this one real short, okay, and then we'll go to the other one, which I think will be longer. But the short one is that we got a call from Mikey in Putnam, and he wants to know about natural antihistamines, because you know how we have all this, you know, we were talking about the gypsy moths, and you take antihistamines to get the rash to go away, and then, you know, bug bites, and, you know, all these things that we, allergies and all. And he's suffering horribly from his allergies, and he said every time he takes a commercial over-the-counter antihistamine, he gets all sleepy and weird, and of course you have to urinate more, and it's just not comfortable. What can you tell me about natural antihistamines, and do they work?
Okay, well, you can certainly try them. Your diphenhydramines and your Benadryls are going to work very quickly. However, yes, you can. So first of all, if you're having histaminic reactions, one of the things you want to do is make sure you're not inflamed to start with. The less inflamed you are to start with, the less histaminic reaction you're going to have. So, you know, if you're eating too much starch and sugar, if you're stressed, if you're eating unhealthy foods, if you're not eating fruits and vegetables and clean protein and essential fatty acids, you're going to be more inflamed. And so it's important to look at your level of inflammation to start with. And really, the first place to start is sugars and starches, because if you take those out of your diet, you'll be a lot less inflamed. And then if you add in things that reduce inflammation, you're going to be a lot better. Okay, so the thing that's happening when you have a histaminic reaction, you have cells in your blood called eosinophils, and they're white blood cells.
I have to comment. There's never a short answer with Dr. Fran, is there?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of my things that I say to my staff all the time is I'll have a patient say to me, quick question. And my staff all knows what the answer to that is. There are no quick questions. Anyway, eosinophils are a white blood cell that's in your blood. I can't believe I just said that. And the reason they're called eosinophils is because when you stain them with eosin dye, they pop, and the eosin dye is red. And anyway, so these special cells are the cells that become encoded into immune globulin E. Immune globulin E is the immune protein that causes you to have histaminic reactions. So it'll give you short-term, immediate allergic reactions, and you get hives, and they're mediated by by IgE. So the histaminic reaction, you're going to degranulate these cells. So these cells live in your blood, and they will have immune reactions in your blood. They also will leave your blood and go into your tissues, into your skin, and into your soft tissue. And they will then they have a different name. They're called mast cells. And mast cells have granules in them, and the granules have histamine in them. So what you want to do is have stuff on board that helps to hold those mast cells together and prevent mast cell degranulation. And you definitely, there are definitely plants that do that, and substances. One of them is vitamin C. So the more vitamin C you have on board, the less likely you're going to have mast cell degranulation. So you could take vitamin C as a supplement. And you can also just consume lots of foods with vitamin C in them, like peppers. Don't forget that peppers of all kinds, cayenne and red and green and yellow peppers, the hot peppers and the not so hot peppers, they all have lots of vitamin C in them. Strawberries are coming out. Notice how I said strawberry because I'm from Greater Philly.
And they talk funny down there.
They say S-H-T-R, street strawberry. So, yeah, I can't help it. I just say strawberry. Anyway, so the strawberries are out, and they have lots of vitamin C in them. I noticed that some local farmers are now, they pull up the truck alongside of the Grange, and they're selling the native strawberries, and you can buy the native strawberries now. They're available if you want to go get them.
Yep.
And so somebody that probably means you should check your local strawberry farms and see if you want to go strawberry picking. Mm-hmm. Might be able to go strawberry picking. Mm-hmm. We go strawberry picking. I would like that. All right. So
yes, you should.
Aw, I want some strawberries.
Well,
I love
go
strawberries.
Pick some strawberries. You know that I worked as a migrant worker picking strawberries when I was in my youth.
You did?
Yeah.
Wow. Where did you migrate to?
I was Holdridge Nurseries down in Ledyard. Had huge strawberry fields.
Okay, you said you're a migrant worker. Where did you migrate to?
From my house in Ledyard. Over
you do
to...
realize a migrant worker migrates to where the strawberries. That means you went to Ledyard, and then you went to Simsbury, and then you went to Stonington,
I went to Ledyard, and then went over to Preston.
You went to Ledyard and Preston, and that's it?
Yeah.
I don't think that qualifies as a migrant worker.
Okay, well, never mind. I did common child labor when I was young picking strawberries.
Sounds terrible. How old were you?
I don't know. They 10 or 12 years old. I don't know. They used to
that
pay
is
us,
child labor.
They used to pay us by the baskets. What I did. And then, of course, you ate, ridiculous amounts of strawberries.
That's
and,
good. As long as you weren't allergic to them.
No.
That's good.
No.
Yeah.
But the idea was, how many baskets can I pick a day? And, back in the day when you could, if you could really burn through it, you could make more than minimum wage doing that.
Nice.
So, and I couldn't get a job otherwise.
Because you were 10.
Because I was young. Oh. So, you do what you do.
Yeah, but they I wonder if there are child labor laws in play there.
We're not going to pin down the poor Holdridges here on this one. You know what? That's what people did back then. There wasn't really an issue with it. I worked for my dad, too, but that was a family business, and that's a different story.
You're really old, so things weren't as, weren't as touchy back then. Yeah. So anyway, so vitamin C containing foods, strawberries, peppers, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, of course citrus. But again, citrus this time, it's not even in season in Florida now. So if you're going to get citrus, it's going to be coming from far away. And I'm not going to say don't eat any citrus. It's just that oranges have a big carbon footprint right now. They're being schlepped from far away and they're not going to be that great. Although... again, that's true of the lemons, too, but you can't keep me from my lemons. Lemons are just so important. My mother has had a few. When I was in there in May, the oranges were done. The Meyer lemon tree had a couple of old lemons on them. They weren't very good. They tasted old, like they were starting to go off. Mm. But it had about a bazillion green lemons on them, like the new lemons. They're green and small, and she's going to have a million Meyer lemons.
Batch coming in.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's what a wonderful tree.
She should pack them in a box and send them off.
Send me. Yes. Maybe she should do that.
I don't know
if
that's legal. I don't know. You had to check.
Right. Well,
Or you just don't tell anyone.
I think I'm going to have to go back there for New Year's this year because I got oranges and lemons. That was great. Or maybe in February.
Okay.
So
we were talking about...
So vitamin C, foods containing vitamin C. A terrific natural antihistamine is nettle leaf. So if you... Nettle leaf tea, if you can drink a lot of that, or you can take the capsules, but I must say, if you drink the tea or take the tincture, it can work really fast and really well. And if you take a lot of nettle tea all the time, it can really be great. And nettles are a classic mast cell stabilizer. The other thing is quercetin. Quercetin is a great natural antihistamine and mast cell stabilizer. And quercetin is in onions and some other foods.
Grapefruit, apples, and okra.
All have quercetin in them. Mm-hmm. Yes. So apples have quercetin, and that's terrific. That's another reason. But again, apples are an issue because it's not in season now.
Right.
So I like to tell people, yeah, and onions, yeah. I mean, if you want to have an apple again, have an apple. The apples are going to have been, either going to be well stored and from last season, or they're coming from somewhere else. You know, they're coming from far away. But because you can still get apples in the store all year, it's just not, they're just not the best thing to have right now because they're not, you know, they're not current. Speaking of currants, they're really high in vitamin C. And if you can get currants, whether they're dried or fresh, currants or currant, black currant juice, that's another great way to get vitamin C, other than orange. And, you know, if you go to Britain, currants are not as popular in the U.S. Black currant is very popular in Britain as a way to get vitamin C. And it's used as a tonic because it's really good for your adrenals. Anything that's high in vitamin C is going to be really good for your adrenals. Like I said, the nettle leaf is really good. The other thing that I tend to give people as an antihistamine, you know, for that histaminic reaction, I'll also give people bromelain, but bromelain is not technically an antihistamine, except that it is a proteolytic enzyme. And so it breaks down the inflammatory proteins that you make when you have an inflammatory response. One of my favorite compounds that I have in my practice has a combination of vitamin C, quercetin, and bromelain, and those can all really help. And like I said, essential fatty acids can help too. So those are really good things for essential fatty acids, so to help you with your histaminic reaction, and those can help on the long term. So Ron, before you rush out, why don't you ask me that other question?
Well, and then the quick question, is there vitamin C in sauerkraut?
Is there? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know. We had Scott call from Plainfield, and he wanted to know.
If there's vitamin C in sauerkraut, that would... So my question would be, is there vitamin C in cabbage? I don't know the answer to that.
Nor I.
There might be.
But I do have another question here, and we're running desperately out of time here.
I know, right? It's terrible. Uh-huh. So sauerkraut... a cup of sauerkraut has 20 milligrams of vitamin C. So the answer is yes, it's not a lot, but it's going to be pretty bioavailable. So let's compare that to strawberries. So strawberries, one strawberry has 7 milligrams of vitamin C. So you have to eat a whole cup of sauerkraut to just get 20 milligrams. When you eat strawberries, you're going to eat a bunch of strawberries. So like depending on how big the strawberry is, I'm going to eat 4, 5, 6. So 6 times 7, I'm getting 42 milligrams of strawberries. Now, mind you, when you take vitamin C pills, you're tending to take hundreds of milligrams or even thousands of milligrams. You're taking way more than what you find in food. The thing is, when you get it in food, it's very bioavailable. It's complexed with bioflavonoids. It's complexed with other things that make it very bioavailable. And I'm not sure how bioavailable when you take a vitamin C pill, if it's going to be as bioavailable as if you eat it in a strawberry or if you eat it in peppers. So if you, through the course of your day, you're eating lots of foods that have vitamin C in them, your vitamin C level is going to go up. And here, I'm going to look in my Fitness Pal here, and I'm going to go to a day when I ate some berries. Let me see if there's a day when I ate some berries. And I'll look at my nutrition, how much my nutrition was. So like yesterday, let's see how much vitamin C I got. Nutrients, vitamin C. It doesn't say I got a lot of vitamin C in my food yesterday. That's really interesting. I only got 14% RDA of vitamin C. Let me look at Saturday. I don't know if I ate some cherries on that day. I'm not doing well in my foods for vitamin C because I got like 91 milligrams. That's interesting. I'm certainly, because I'm not clocking the vitamin C in my supplements in my Fitness Pal, but according to this, food wise, I'm not doing too great for vitamin C. That's interesting.
Well, so it's that time of year, kind of.
No. Well, I mean, if you eat enough produce, you'll get your RDA of vitamin C.
Maybe it's the type of produce we're eating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. So yeah. Anyway, right, it's going to depend on what you're eating, absolutely. So I have to go.
Okay, yeah. So we're going to have to table the other question here, and yes. I just want my caller to know that we will address it next week. So Diane down in New London, was concerned about her cholesterol, and she's very active, and she has what she thinks are high numbers. But we'll talk about that next week.
That's not a quick question.
I know that. That's why I used the other one as the quick question, and it turned into not the quick question. I made the wrong choice, I guess.
That's okay.
But anyway, we can probably spend a lot of time on that next week. So
we could do a thing on lipids. So you've been listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, and we will be back next week with more Radio Naturopath.